This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living with me, Lee Chui Lin. Sorry really can be the hardest word, but for many of us, it comes naturally when there has been a mistake. For doctors, where that mistake could be a matter of life and death, that apology can come at a high price. There's been a push in the United Kingdom recently for doctors to apologise in the event of a mistake. But what will that really do for patient confidence, and what are the legal ramifications? Dr. Krishna Kumahari Krishnan, President of the Malaysian Medical Association, provides a local perspective. Dr. Krishna, in medical school, what are doctors taught to do in the event of a mistake?
Previously, during my time in medical school, we were hardly taught anything about this. But now, communication is becoming a very important topic that is taught in medical schools. Most of the problems actually occur because there is miscommunication or lack of communication between the doctor and the patient that results in complaints.
So then what is considered a medical mistake? I mean, this is a very broad term.
Yes, medical mistake is a very broad term. But a medical mistake, if you want to say, is if there is a mistake done in the management of a patient, and there are many different types, okay, and the most commonly documented one is considered as medicational error. And even that is defined with many parts.
So in the event of a mistake that causes mortality, who does the buck stop with?
Okay, it actually depends on the situation. There may be systematic errors or there may be individual errors. But at the end of the day, the doctor responsible for the patient is ultimately responsible for the care of the patient.
Okay, so earlier when you said medical mistakes, I mean, they're very, very wide-ranging, obviously. So how do you know when, from the patient's perspective, how do you know when there has been a mistake and when perhaps, you know, you just had an adverse reaction?
Okay, a lot of mistakes actually don't cause harm because there are various measures of duplication or prevention that prevents the patient from actually receiving harm, or what we call measures taken to avoid complications. And so even if errors are made, but because there is a backup mechanism to prevent these mistakes from being carried through, therefore the patient doesn't realize there was an error. And therefore, there's no poor outcome. So most of the patients don't know this kind of what we call mistakes, because we have a check and balance system that tries to reduce the amount of mistakes or injuries occurring to the patient. To say whether it's an adverse reaction or not, unfortunately, medical science is not a pure science. It's an art based on science, and you cannot predict everybody's outcome.
Could you give us an example of that check and balance system, you know, for instance, where a mistake that occurs isn't carried through?
Okay, very simple thing. Let's just say now you post up a patient for surgery. You explain to the patient the surgery that is going to be done. The patient then has to sign the consent. So the first check is the patient herself, him or herself, is already checking. Then the patient actually comes to the hospital and gets admitted. And by the patient coming, they have agreed upon it. But while the patient is in the hospital, the consent is usually retaken and the information is relayed, usually by a different person. And the nurses and the anesthetists will also ask the patients about this. So before the patient actually reaches the theater, there have been several lines of checking that the patient actually wants and requires the surgery.
And from the doctor's perspective, can you take us through the emotions that doctors feel when they make an error?
Oh, that is actually, you must understand that doctors are after all humans. Okay, to err is human and to forgive is divine. Okay, everybody talks about the trauma to the patient and the family go through. We all understand that they are undergoing a traumatic event and will take time to accept and overcome this event. Everybody is usually sympathetic to them and will be supported. But remember that no doctor wakes up in the morning and says that I'm going to make an error and injure my patients. Okay? It is therefore very traumatic for a doctor when he realizes that he has made a mistake. His whole life goes into turmoil. There's a mixed match of overwhelming emotions, resulting in the doctor feeling sad, guilty, depressed, helpless and useless. On top of trying to help the attended patient and the family, he or she is usually harassed by the bosses and the authorities. The doctor is made to write up reports, prepare documents, prepare his defense, being scolded and reprimanded. The doctor is further made to be the sole guilty party when the fault may not be his or hers at all. There is usually no support and is felt isolated from the system. This may then lead to depression, and some doctors have even left the profession in this situation.
So when it comes to receiving an apology then, it can be a very loaded thing. But in that instance where, you know, with all these emotions, could an apology actually make not just the patient feel better, but the doctor feel better as well?
Okay. If we didn't have lawyers and judges and the legal system around, it would have made life so much easier, because we can easily apologize to our patients and both we and the patients would feel happier. But unfortunately, things do not happen that way, and we always have the risk of a legal suit hanging over our head. And therefore, we have been already advised that we have to be very careful what we say. But at the same time, it is how you have developed a relationship with your patient. If you had a good relationship with your patient prior to the event, the patient is more likely to accept what you have said, especially if you say it early, rather than wait for a complaint to happen before you start explaining.
Because then it just looks like you're trying to cover your tracks.
Exactly. And that is why when an adverse outcome happens, we usually advise doctors to try and give as much information as possible to the patient. Because some of the times, most of the times, these adverse outcomes are not anticipated or not expected. And so both sides, both the doctor and the patients, are surprised by the change of events. And usually they try to explain as much as they can. But you must understand, doctors don't know everything, and therefore they cannot give you all the answers.
So having said all that, are doctors in Malaysia encouraged to apologize?
Okay, the legal fraternity have advised us not to apologize, because it would be looked upon as you are guilty and you have accepted the burden of responsibility.
And would be admissible in court?
Yes.
So then conversely, when are you legally or ethically bound to apologize to patients?
Currently, there's nothing legally or ethically say for us to apologize. But what I usually recommend would be that you try to apologize without accepting blame, and you show it with empathy and care. Okay, how you do it is you use not only verbal but non-verbal language to try and convince the patient that, look here, I'm trying to explain to you what has happened. I'm sorry that this bad thing has happened to you. Although we do not know the reason, or if we know the reason, we explain to you the reason that it has happened. But you have to understand the situation in which it happened.
So have you personally apologized to a patient or their family?
Yes, many times. Being in charge of a department that does 8,000 deliveries a year, you have one of the highest risk of having complaints, because every pregnant woman who comes to the hospital expects to go back home with a live, healthy baby. But we all know that not everybody is that lucky, and a small percentage do have problems, and we have to start explaining to them from the very beginning.
So what have been the outcomes of those apologies when you have made them? Have they been good outcomes?
Rather than apologizing, what we do is whenever there's an adverse outcome, we inform the patients as and when the things go on, and so that the patients is kept informed, and usually the husband is there together with them, and we try to give them as much information of what is going on. Sometimes we all don't have all the information, so we let them know what we have, and we have to accept that sometimes we have to tell them that we also don't know, because we don't know everything. So we try to explain as much as we can. And usually if you keep explaining throughout the process, patients are more acceptable, because they are going through the process that's during that time and are more likely to accept it rather than wait till the end before you say something.
I'm speaking today to Dr. Krishna Kumar Harikrishnan, President of the Malaysian Medical Association, and we're exploring the idea of apologies in the medical fraternity and what legal and ethical implications this might have. I'd like to hear from you. You know, would you like your doctors to apologize? And if they do, are you more or less likely to seek legal action? The number to text is 016-201-9000, or you can tweet BFM Radio.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin with Dr. Krishna Kumar Harikrishnan, President of the Malaysian Medical Association, and we're looking at apologies and doctors and whether or not that increases patient confidence. I'm looking forward to hear from you. The number to text is 016-201-9000, or you can tweet BFM Radio. Let us know, do you want your doctors to apologise to you? Dr. Krishna, at the moment in Malaysia, what measures keep doctors accountable in their practice?
There are various different systems in different places, depending where you practice. If you run your own practice, you will have your own system. But if you run, you work in hospitals, each hospital has their own systems of being accountable.
Regulators in the United Kingdom are suggesting that doctors should be made to apologise if they make a mistake or face tough sanctions. What implications might that have for medical practice?
You really need to ask the lawyers. With the increasing medico-legal problems arising, this is becoming more difficult. Before it was easy. You apologize and explain and the patient goes back happy. Now there'll be a complaint letter closely followed by a legal suit. So how do you overcome this problem?
Well, I mean, I think there have been some studies done in the United States, one of the most litigious countries when it comes to medical legal issues. And what they found was that when hospitals practiced a sort of more open policy of apologizing to patients, they actually experienced a drop in legal suits. You know, is this a risk worth taking here in Malaysia, in your opinion?
You see, it's like this. If you apologize, they are less, at the early stage, they are less likely complaints going on to legal suits, because when you apologize or when you give information to the patients are made aware of their situation and are less likely to carry forward. But if you do not do it early, then you will end up with a suit. And therefore, it is early intervention that is more important rather than the apology itself, because the information given to the patient is paramount.
Some patients feel that the concealment of an error is almost as worrying as the error itself, I think, which is what you were alluding to earlier with the idea of early communication. How often are errors concealed in medical practice?
It is very hard for us to say this because we don't really have data for that. Because, you see, depending on how you define your error, the incidence varies. And but it is becoming virtually impossible for you to conceal in the current situation, especially if you work in a hospital, because you don't practice alone. You have nurses, paramedics, and other personnel around the hospital who also know whether you have done it correctly or wrongly, because whatever you do, everybody is watching. And so to conceal something now, it is very difficult.
Doctors who fail to blow the whistle on a fellow GP, I mean, as you mentioned, doctors don't work in isolation. And in the United Kingdom, doctors who fail to blow that whistle on a doctor who is a cause for concern may face even stricter sanctions than doctors who don't apologise. Is this a system that would work in Malaysia?
Now my question to you is, how do you know that somebody has done something wrong unless you have been furnished with adequate information to make that decision? And most of the time, different practices, especially GP practices, are actually in separate practices, and you don't have the information about the patient, nor do you have on how the management is done. So how do you pass judgment on somebody without the full information?
We have a text message that says, doctors charge unforgivable fees, and that's why it's difficult to forgive a doctor that's made a mistake. And I suppose there is an important point there about the financial component of it, right? People who pay a certain amount expect also a corresponding amount of care.
Next time when you pay your bills, please check the bill. Look how much or percentage of the fee is actually to the doctor and how much it is to the hospital. Doctors' fees are regulated in this country, but not the hospital fees. So why are you saying that you are overpaying for doctors? We are actually one of the cheapest healthcares in the world.
A message from Joe who says, once when collecting medicine on behalf of someone at a government pharmacy, I was given the wrong medicine, and if I wasn't alert, some serious consequences would happen. Did they apologize? No. They looked relieved when I told them I will not pursue the matter, but I told them to be more careful.
Okay, it is quite strange that in government setups now that you have this, because usually there is a double-checking system within the pharmacy itself before the drugs are dispensed outside. And therefore, usually the patients are usually counseled about the medication they receive. And therefore, usually patients will get to know straight away whether they are getting the appropriate medication or not. We have a problem with writing. As you know, doctor's writings are
famously
not the best. And we are going into the electronic world where even the government is going into what we call electronic dispensing or electronic prescription, where the doctors actually prescribes electronically and it ends up in the pharmacies and you collect your medication there. It is being carried out on a trial basis, and we actually wait to see how effective it is.
There's an important point there, I think, also about patient education and awareness, because, I mean, Jo here, she knew that the drugs were wrong. She was paying attention. How important is it for patients and caregivers to also have that level of attention to detail, or should the onus be on the care providers?
See, in the West, it's very simple. Everybody is well aware about their own illnesses and medications that they get. They are so aware that they actually know everything about their disease and about their medication. In this country, the level of awareness, unfortunately, is not there. And it takes two to clap, and therefore it takes two to have the best healthcare. Both the provider and the receiver need to understand the disease and the medication for the disease.
We're discussing doctors and apologies today. Do you want your doctors to apologize? And how would that affect whether or not you pursue legal action? We want to hear from you. The number to text 016-201-9000, or you can tweet BFM Radio. So going back to the idea of accountability, what role then do doctors play in keeping one another accountable? I mean, you make a good point that it's very hard for somebody without all the facts of a case to say literally Dr. So-and-so is the one at fault. But having said that, I mean, there must be some sort of system where doctors kind of understand one another.
Okay, in small practices, there may not be an adequate system. But in any hospital, both government and private, there are systems in place. They have a medical advisory council. And this medical advisory council usually looks into complaints. The system is more elaborate in the government sector because every complaint is looked at seriously. Now, when in the government hospital you get a complaint, whether it's verbal or written, there is usually a response, and there is usually a meet-up session to explain what is the complaint, and the caregivers try to give the explanation to it. If the complainant is still unhappy, there is an internal inquiry. And again, there will be other doctors called in to actually look into it and give an explanation. And if the patient is still not happy, then there's an external inquiry where doctors outside the hospitals are called to run an inquiry and therefore give an explanation to the patient after that.
In the United Kingdom, this scheme aims to improve patient protection and public confidence in doctors. In your opinion, would hearing apologies from doctors instill greater confidence? Or do we still want our doctors to be that voice of God?
No, we don't want to be the voice of God. As I said before, doctors are humans after all. We tend to make mistakes as well. Now, we try to minimize mistakes through having certain standard operating procedures. We have clinical practice guidelines, department procedures to try to standardize the way we manage patients. Unfortunately, diseases don't read textbooks and they don't follow the same pathway. So we have to make variations of practice to the different diseases. And therefore, there is variations that we have to accept. But we always try to make sure that we have the patient's interests in our heart.
We have a message here from Kumar who says, doctors apologizing is good for healthcare. Legal action should be considered and pursued if mortality or morbidity is sustained. Would you agree with that?
Okay, you can only have a legal suit if there is an injury. If there is no injury, you cannot have a legal suit. I mean, that's the basic principles of a medical legal suit. As I said, most of the incidences that do occur actually doesn't reach the patient because the mistakes are found out and are overcome before an adverse outcome occurs due to the various preventive measures that have been taken in place. So I don't think so the doctor would apologize if nothing reached the patient. He will apologize to the staff who found out the error so that he and actually saved him the agony of going through a problem. But the patient usually doesn't get to suffer anything.
Having said that, I mean, let's say you have a doctor who has made an error and it never reached the patient, but this error or different errors crop up frequently in this doctor's work. And just because it didn't harm a patient doesn't mean that this doctor isn't making mistakes. What happens then?
Okay, I'll just give you a simple thing. Error in taking blood for group and cross-match. Because we know when we give a blood transfusion and if you don't give the appropriate blood, there can be adverse outcomes. And for blood transfusion now, we have many steps to check and prevent a patient from getting the wrong blood. We have junior doctors who have made errors. It is now standard practice that if a doctor makes two errors, they are extended in their training. So there are disciplinary measures being taken about these doctors.
In Malaysia, in your view, does the general public have a high level of trust and confidence in their doctors?
At the moment, we still have a high level of confidence and trust among our patients with their doctors. The thing is, this is because of our relationship that we have with our patients. Most patients have their own personal doctors, which they are very comfortable with. But if you go and see a stranger, then that relationship may not be there. And you won't have the same confidence and comfort with a new person.
So when would you say that initiating legal action against a doctor would be the right move from the point of view of the patient? When would you advise a patient to seek that?
Okay, now the thing is, you have to go through the steps. You can issue a complaint and try to get an answer to your complaint. Now, if people stonewall you and don't give you an explanation, then I think you warrant. But a lot of times that the so-called error or injury may not be actually the fault of the doctor. Now, you have to listen and understand the explanations that are given. If they are valid and truthful in the explanation, I think you have to accept it. But if you think there was an intentional flaw or there was a systemic flaw that created an injury, then you should proceed.
When it comes to litigation, where does it end? Is a doctor's error considered a personal one and you seek out a suit against that doctor, or does it represent the hospital and the hospital system?
Okay, it depends on the situation. Usually, if you look at legal suits in this country, the doctor is named as the first party, the hospital director is named as the second party, and the Ministry of Health is named as the third party in a government hospital. In a private hospital, it goes in that direction, but the third party is usually the private hospital itself. So the first person to answer the complaint would be the doctor.
Always the doctor. First line.
First line.
Okay. This also ties in with the concept of defensive medicine. What is defensive medicine?
Okay, defensive medicine is, as this happens whenever litigation goes up. It is estimated that there is at least a 30 million payout in the government and another 30 million in the private sector per year on medical legal cases, whether they are sorted out in court or out of court. Now, that is becoming huge. All right? Put it another way. Because of that, medical indemnity is going up. Okay? For an obstetrician to practice in the private sector now, the medical indemnity insurance premium is close to $80,000 per year. The cost of a normal delivery for a private doctor is about 800 ringgit. So the doctor has to do 100 normal deliveries before he sees an income. So you look at the disparity of these amounts and then you wonder, why do doctors want to be protective? Because with the increasing cost, they have to be more careful because they don't want to be sued.
Having said that, how can companies and governments avoid falling into the trap of depersonalizing the patient? I mean, while it's completely understandable that doctors would want to protect themselves, it's also completely understandable that a patient seeking care would expect to be protected as well.
Okay, this is a very difficult thing because there is no simple answer to it. Now, if you are going to get 7 million for a case, legal suit, then you will be sure that the doctors are going to be very defensive. Now, we have to, number one, limit out the payouts. Okay? And one of the things that we have asked to limit the payouts is, if you are paying for maintenance of health or maintenance of life, that should stop the moment the person dies. We have got cases where the families are paid several million and the child dies a couple of months later. And so that money that was meant for the child does not exist anymore. So all this comes into play. So you need to be very careful. We can always have a no-fault claim system where we pool our resources to a non-profit insurance system. And if you have suffered something, you will get a payment. But you get the payment because of your injury, not because the fault of anybody. And therefore, everybody contributes into that system. And therefore, the claimants usually goes up, as shown in New Zealand. But the amount that is paid out per person is far lower than the legal system.
And does that forge a relationship of trust between doctor and patient as well? Because I guess the doctor isn't always worried that anything that they do will, you know, come back to haunt them.
This relationship of trust and confidence is not something related to litigation. It is a personal relationship between the doctor and patient. I don't think so. The lawyers can erode very much into that. But it is in the individual doctor and patient who develops this relationship of trust and confidence. And it depends on how you communicate with your patients that instills this trust and confidence.
On that note, Joe has come back and said, in Singapore government hospitals, doctors give their numbers to patients to allow for more communication. Can this be done here?
Okay, I give you an example. Kandang Kerbau Hospital, which does less than 8,000 deliveries a year, has about 60 consultants. Seraman Hospital, which has 2 consultants, has 8,000 deliveries. Can we match Singapore with Malaysia?
Population alone, I think, would be an issue. And we have a message from DK who says, read in the papers, a doctor administered wrong medication to a pregnant lady, which resulted in a stillbirth. And the doctor admitted wrongdoing in court, but I found out the doctor is still practicing at the same hospital. How is the doctor not banned from practicing?
I'm surprised how they could prove that a medication to the mother killed the baby, because it is not as straightforward as you and I can say, because you must understand that the baby has a defense in having the placenta there. So I don't know how about this court case was decided, so I cannot really comment on it. But then the court case would also determine whether this doctor is allowed to practice or not.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. When would a doctor be declared unfit for practice and barred?
Okay, you see, whenever there is a court case finding negligence found on the doctor and proven to the doctor, it is usually brought up to the Malaysian Medical Council. They have a system on determining the fitness to practice.
Advocates in the United Kingdom have stressed that these sanctions should not be used as an excuse to criticise doctors. How much pressure and stress are doctors under, and how might a situation like this add to it?
You see, whenever a doctor has to undergo a lawsuit or a complaint, that doctor's life is a living hell. Okay? As I said, the doctor is left all alone to defend for himself. And usually the stress loads are very, very high. Even if the doctor has not made a mistake, and it's very clear, but the stress that he has to go through a court case is torrential.
So what support needs to be in place for doctors to handle these emotional reactions?
We have to have a system where doctors and other medical staff need to be supported when such an adverse outcome occurs. It's not only the patients that have suffered, the doctors have suffered themselves. And this support is usually lacking in this country. In the West, usually there's a counsellor at bay to help counsel the doctor as well on how to cope with these new stresses. Because if you don't, the number of mental illnesses that the doctors suffer due to stress also goes up.
And that's no good for any of us, really.
Yes.
And finally, what message would you have for us on the subject of doctors and apologies?
I would say you can apologize, but do not accept liability. So the way you do it is you show empathy and care for your patients, that their interest is always in the center of your care for them. It usually shows out that you are through your non-verbal communication, because if you show empathy and care, the patients are usually willing to accept. But if you are aloof and just say sorry and without meaning it, then you're not achieving what you're trying to do.
Thank you very much, Dr. Krishna. I've been speaking to Dr. Krishna Kumarakrishnan, President of the Malaysian Medical Association. We've been exploring the idea of doctors and apologies and the legal and ethical ramifications of that. You've been listening to The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.